time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
What, people work on December 31st? Who? Not the conference commissioners. They don't.
No. Pete Thamel.
Credit Bryce Young. He had one of just the most dynamic games, individual games I've ever seen a quarterback have.
With SI's Pat Forty.
The committee, despite itself, did a fine job. Despite its five-week run of slapstick ineptitude television.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. Field is set. Alabama, number one. First number four, Cincinnati. Playing across from the Arlington Walmart. 3 o'clock Eastern time, New Year's Eve. Followed by number two, Michigan versus number three, Georgia. That'll be down in Miami Gardens about 8. Yes, we're still doing this New Year's Eve thing. They haven't given up on it, man.
They're going to take back. They're going to remake New Year's Eve. Remember?
The paradigm of New Year's Eve will change.
Yeah. Yeah.
The all-time most outrageously ridiculous ideas ever.
You'll stop drinking. Yeah.
That's
right. Stop drinking and partying to watch 8 hours of football.
We will get Americans to stop partying and start watching college football. I mean, how do you go against alcohol?
It's kind of undefeated. It's a one seed.
It is undefeated. Especially, alcohol? I mean, on New Year's Eve, it's absolutely undefeated.
Alcohol ain't played nobody, Paul. This is Bama. Yeah, I mean, really. Thank you, Jim Delaney. Thank you, old Big Ten commissioner. Most powerful man in college sports. Had to protect the sanctity of the Rose Bowl and its little flower parade every year. Made sure we didn't get it. We didn't want to interfere with the. We don't want to play football on the day everyone wants us to play football. Nope, nope, nope. Got to protect the Rose Bowl. Then I'll quickly take a job when I retire as a consultant for the Rose Bowl. A sketchy politician. Thank you, Jim Delaney. Appreciate the corruption. You're screwing up our schedule. That's all right. It's a different issue. I'm just throwing rat poison out there like Coach Saban wants us to. And I'm not even doing it in a Southern accent. So much is happening.
Yummy rat poison.
Yummy rat poison. I mean, yes, a lot has transpired. A lot since our last podcast.
This is the setup. Seemed pretty simple. As we've said all along, why do they do these rankings so everyone hates them when at the end of the day, there's no controversy or very little? The big debate was whether you move Bama to number one or Michigan to number one. I kind of liked Michigan's resume, but man, this is not a much of a distinction between these two. Certainly when you hang 41 on this vaunted Georgia defense, as you guys witnessed, there's a strong case for Alabama to be number one. So it wasn't a big deal. Georgia only goes to 3. Cincinnati stays at 4. And after that, there was really no I mean, number 5 is Notre Dame. They lost by 13 at home to number 4. So no controversies, really. There's a lot of conspiracies that they didn't want to set up a SEC rematch in the semis, or that ESPN's trying to make sure they get an SEC title game or all that. I love a good conspiracy. I'm not really buying that. I think this is pretty reasonable. Pat, your thoughts. Do we have conspiracies, or did the playoff committee do a fine job here in the end?
The committee, despite itself, did a fine job. Despite its five-week run of slapstick ineptitude television Tuesday nights, on Sunday at noon or 12:20 or whenever they finally stopped talking on ESPN and got around to the rankings, got it right, I think. Yes, I agree with you that you could have a debate between Alabama and Michigan for 1-2. You could have a debate between Georgia and Cincinnati for 3-4. 3-4 debate might be stronger than the 1-2. If you go through game by game, I think Alabama's schedule, they've got better wins. So I would give them the nod at number one, starting with the trump card of housing the undisputed number one team. Georgia-Cincinnati, it's a little closer because Cincinnati has a better top win and they're undefeated. But after that, the schedule tilts very heavily in favor of Georgia, which played no close games. They destroyed everyone between Clemson and Alabama, whereas Cincinnati was life and death to beat Tulsa, was close against Navy, you know, had some scrapes in there. But on the whole, hey, I'm excited. I think this is going to be great. I'm looking forward to both games and the buildup for both of them. The freshness is good. There is no conspiracy. If people are like, oh, they're trying to set it up for a SEC final. Well, you know what? There's one way to change that. Beat them. If you, you know, if you're worried about that, then Michigan beat Georgia. Cincinnati beat Alabama, or just one of them beat them, and then there's no conspiracy there. I don't believe there is one to begin with. I'm a little surprised that Georgia, the early line I saw was like 8.5 favorite over Michigan. That stood out to me, surprising. Since Alabama line is predictably large over Cincinnati, I believe like 13. You know, I'm looking forward to both games, and I'm looking forward to writing about the whole shebang and us blathering about it.
I'm also pro blather. Just in general. I'm also just pro no complaining, right? We complain a lot on this podcast. We lean into the negative. This was clean and easy and nobody screwed anything up. So good for them. They made their 3-foot putt. Yeah, it took their four hour celebration of it. I like this field. Like there's a Cinderella in college football. That's like cool. That's fun. That's different. I really like the Georgia-Michigan matchup. That is like football from the 70s and Smash Mouth, old themes. Yeah, you know, two somewhat limited quarterbacks, two pretty dynamic run games, couple awesome front sevens that are going to counter each other's, you know, they're going to really make the ball move like that. The over-under on that will be interesting. I'm sure Sully knows what it is, but I wouldn't see a lot of points being scored in that game, even though Michigan is just all of a sudden scoring a lot of points too. So I guess I shouldn't limit them, but they ragdolled Iowa pretty good, and they certainly did the same thing to Ohio State's defense, marching up and down and up and down the field on that. So it'd be interesting to see how Georgia responds. It had been sort of this season of unbridled optimism and a feeling, at least walking into that Georgia Dome yesterday, a coronation was coming. You know, they had way more fans there, way more tailgates there. I'm sure it's in Atlanta, but they were there for that moment in time, that, you know, maybe pivot point to where the SEC points towards Athens instead of Tuscaloosa. And boy, did that not happen. What would you say, Pat? Was it 2-1 Georgia fans in the Dome?
Yeah, I would say that's about right. 65-35 or so, or 70, you know, somewhere in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somewhere in there. And, you know, Alabama, it wasn't like Alabama punched them in the face right away. They felt each other out and punted to win and all that stuff. And Georgia jumped out to a lead. And then, I mean, credit Bryce Young. He had one of just the most dynamic games, individual games I've ever seen a quarterback have on a big stage. I mean, he was awesome. Jameson Williams was awesome. And John Metchie, it's a shame that he's going to be out for the playoff, because he's obviously, you know, a dynamic player. And I do feel like with Alabama at receiver, after those two, there's a pretty distinct drop off from, you know, superstars to just very good, you know, just very good players, but not like elite difference makers. The way Jameson Williams ran away from Georgia on that crossing pattern, I think it was a 67-yard touchdown pass early. Wow. I mean, that like made me stand up in my seat. Just watching him take off. That was like he had like cartoon jetpacks on his back. So anyway, but on the field, I love the field. I love having an underdog in Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati probably, and I know these are funny things to say, matches up with Alabama a little bit better than Georgia. Cincinnati's weakness is its offensive line, especially its exterior tackles. And obviously Will Anderson's going to be a factor, and they're going to have to spend a lot of time chipping him and doubling him and doing all those things. But I think just the blunt force collectively of Georgia's front seven, which we're not going to just ignore what they did the first 12 weeks because they got ragdolled on Saturday. I think that would have been a lot for Cincinnati to overcome on offense. And that game has two best quarterbacks. I mean, those are two best quarterbacks in the field, and it's not really even close. Obviously, obviously Bryce Young will be the favorite to be the top pick in the 23 draft, and I still think Desmond Ridder could find himself in the first round in this upcoming one. All he's done is win. He's mature. He's football smart. He's not the most accurate quarterback, which would be the knock, but he's a very good player. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the field.
Good field.
I'm excited about where we are.
Yeah, good field. I agree. Good four. A lot of drama. Let's go through each one, okay? And get to it. There's certainly Alabama. I think the question is, are we getting the Alabama that played Georgia? We're getting the Alabama that played Auburn. Scored 3 points in 59 minutes and needed Brian Harsin to decide decide he wanted as many overtimes as possible with a one-legged quarterback. You know, look, Alabama would have made this field regardless if they play this way. But like, what team are we getting is the question. Because in the first couple minutes, it's 10-0 Georgia. And Notre Dame starts thinking they're getting in. Like, this is starting to look like Alabama's going to get beat. I was pretty excited. I was going to write a column, you know, about Notre Dame. We only have four. I'm fine with all four, but Notre Dame in would have been fun, right? This is going to be the, you know, the coach quit
story. The story is excellent.
Yeah. Win one for the quitter. It would have been phenomenal.
You already had that typed in, didn't you?
Yeah,
I did. I did. Didn't happen. But which Bama are we going to get? And is that see, this is the thing. I got flaws with all four teams. I got mostly positives about all four teams because they're the four best. But this isn't like last year's Alabama where you're like, come on now, right? Like, I mean, who's beating them, right? Maybe Ohio State. Not really. Everyone's got a thing. So what – you guys were there the last 2 weeks. You watched Alabama. Which one's showing up?
Maybe it's recency bias, but I was so blown away with what they did to Georgia's defense. Like, having watched a ton of Georgia this year, I just didn't think that could happen to their defense. Now, there were two very important plays where Georgia did it to themselves, and one of them was that 67-yard pass to Jameson Williams where they busted the coverage badly and left him wide open, and then he put on the jets to get to the end zone. That was a third down. There was a third and 10 where they left Mechie with nobody within 20 yards of him on the sideline. Either of those plays, or both of them, you cover the way you've covered all year, you're off the field, and it was 10-0 the first time. You get off the field, then get the ball back, you score again, that game could go differently. But they made the big plays when they had the chances, and then once they started going, I mean, Bryce Young caught fire. It was unbelievable. Dazzling what he did. I mean, some of the plays he made, the scramble and lateral pitch out that he made, I think it was to Brian Robinson. Another play where somebody's like grabbing on his leg and he throws the ball. I mean, boy, was he good. And the one thing that also, you know, Pete, where we sit in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, we're kind of in the corner near the end zone, so you get a back view. Georgia's offensive line, especially early in the game, was opening such huge holes, but they were getting 6, 8, maybe 10 yards because Alabama tackles and closes so well in that second level. Their linebackers are phenomenal tacklers, and they run so well. So, I mean, I just watched that. Like, those guys are probably used to going 40 yards against Kentucky and Florida and whoever. Against Alabama, uh-uh. So, my maybe recency bias is I think that's the Alabama we're seeing from here on out.
Yeah, so Pat and I were complete prisoners of the moment of watching the slog at the Iron Bowl of Alabama's offense. I mean, Alabama's offensive line was terrible in that Auburn game. I mean, it was jarring to see Alabama on a third and short or a second and short try to run the ball using brute strength and just completely getting pushed back. And it was just very, very strange. Hey, and give Derek Mason credit. That might have been one of the best coordinated games of the year to really just cut the legs out from Alabama like that. And they didn't have those types of busts that really defined Georgia's day. So, I mean, there's no other more natural reaction in the Overreaction Monday podcast than to just predict yummy rat poison doom for Alabama 1 week and then to come back the next week and say it's going to be an unimpeded march to the next Nick Saban national championship, right? Like, if that's the only way to predict it. The Cincinnati matchup, Cincinnati has a very good defensive line, but it's certainly not an SEC level unit. They do have, and it's interesting, very heavy linebackers. Like, their linebackers are almost like not the paradigm that we use anymore, meaning in football, like, they're not going to probably get a ton of NFL interest, even though they've been really productive. And that's because, like, those players now have to be more diverse and guard tight ends and move in space a little better, et cetera. So I thought that would help them against Michigan because they would have been able to really, like, you know, get up there and stop the run. I don't know if Cincinnati's – we're talking about Alabama, aren't we? I'm blowing the assignment here.
So we'll get to Cincinnati.
Yeah, no, sorry about that. So I just feel like
Alabama showing up. Yeah,
I'm messing everything up.
Stick with the plan, man.
I
mean,
it's a pretty simple. I know.
It doesn't matter. We're gonna get to this part anyway. It doesn't matter.
I freelance too much. Like all high maintenance.
You know, like getting into like who's playing in the New Mexico Bowl, right?
Yeah. I mean, okay. So, I'd love to though.
You're doing fine.
Yeah.
According to Sully, UTEP's playing it.
That's right.
I trust Sully on those matters. That's for sure. He's a reliable source. I will say this. An NFL scout texted me this morning. The single most fun matchup for Alabama and especially if Mechie's out, this will even get highlighted even more, will be to see Jameson Williams and his Jets go up against Sauce. Big, long, lanky Sauce. That's going to be really fun. This is obviously the best quarterback.
A lot of NFL scouts watching that.
Yes, sir.
Money to be made. Time.
Those are two top 10 picks. Those guys will be, you know, going at each other on Sundays years from now and in playoff games, and they'll, you know, there'll be people writing stories about the time they played each other in the playoff. They're elite, high-end players who've had awesome seasons. And I'll leave my Alabama with this Alabama thought. I give Jameson Williams a lot of credit. It wasn't that he wasn't going to play at Ohio State or they didn't use him at Ohio State, but because of the glut of talent there, he wasn't going to be featured. So what a great use of the portal, where he went somewhere where he could go chase a national title, learn a different system, and be featured like he needed to be featured. Yeah, so that's just been everybody won there. You know, and Ohio State certainly could have used them, but they didn't run him off. He wasn't like overlooked. Like he wasn't sitting there and, you know, Ryan Day and Brian Hartline were like, oh, that guy's not any good. No, he was good. He played, but there was a constellation of stars there where he was clearly one of the two elite stars at Alabama.
All right. Michigan, number two, heck of a couple weeks here. Absolute domination of Iowa. Not particularly a surprise, but the offense is warm down too. Hassan Haskins now has 20 TDs this season. We talked last week about how much we love the way this guy runs. Most in Michigan history, most rushing touchdowns in the history of Michigan. That's a lot of good running backs, man. First Big Ten title in 17 years. First playoff appearance ever. The Jim Harbaugh redemption tour. It's been amazing. I watched him this morning on ESPN and he started actually sounding like a human being again. It's like actual sentences he was putting out there. I think he like short-circuited for a while and was just like even gazing off into space, not paying attention to the question even more. Right. He's bad after games, although I give him credit. All he wants to do is let the players talk, which I respect.
Yeah.
And the sideline person's like, we got to talk about this. And he'd be like, my guys, right? So he's trying, but Captain Comeback. Is that a comeback, man? Playing in front of at the Colts Stadium where his number's retired, never played in that Lucas Oil, but title game would be back there. This the question with Michigan that I would have is, can they run the ball against Georgia? I actually think Michigan's best matchup or better matchup would have been against Alabama. Nothing against Alabama because there would have been many problems, but can they run against that Georgia defense? Because seemingly they have to. That's my question I have for that. I'll start with you, Pete.
I mean, I think this will be their biggest challenge, running the ball. One of the things Michigan has done so well this year, and we saw it these last few weeks, is pound people and grind them down, right? Like, that's what they've done. They've established the run. It's like it's the old Stanford recipe from 09, 10, and Harbaugh's early years there. They have this, you know, they just keep running power until you run into submission. They have Ben Herbert, who's one of the best strength coaches in the country. He's been around. He was at Wisconsin. He was at Arkansas with Bielma. And there is just a complete power football mentality instilled in this team. The most impressive part about Georgia's defense to me is the depth. I mean, they just, you know, they have absolute monster depth. And that's, you know, the big buzzy phrase right now is stacking classes, right? Like Georgia's had top class. I think they have the top class coming up. They were in the top five last year. They've been able to stack classes to the point where the first round picks who are up front, like Jordan Davis, get replaced by other first round picks. And that cycle keeps going. But they are bigger and they are burlier than Alabama at those positions. And some of that is a little bit age too, right? Like Alabama lost six first round picks. Like that's, and for them to do what they did to get here is unbelievable. And this is sort of, this is Georgia's, you know, very much Georgia's moment. And I'm excited to see, you know, when they run Jordan Davis off the field, they run Jalen Carter on, right? And he may be more disruptive and better and a better long-term prospect. So there's a lot of power. There's a lot of force. And I have a full belief that is going to be a distinct struggle for Michigan. That said, I did not think Michigan would be sitting number two in the playoff with one loss. They started the season unranked, which is pretty incredible.
I was mocked for picking them to win more than seven games on this podcast.
Yes, you were.
Nailed it. You predicted Iowa would win the Big Ten West, and they did. Let's not talk about the race for the case. Pat, can they run?
How did those stats end up anyway?
I don't recall. We stopped. It was a,
We stopped counting 3 weeks ago, Pete. I don't know what happened.
There was an accounting error.
Sully officially quit at halftime of the San Diego State game.
Sully had the document, but it blue screened. Can they run? And then the other option will be how big of a factor can Aiden Hutchinson be? Because once again, look, I the number of plays he impacts is just extraordinary if you watch that game. And I know he's not a quarterback, but my God, this guy. I mean, they know he's coming. They tried to double team him all night and he just runs through people. He's an astounding football player right now. I would not be shocked at all if he's not the number one pick of the Detroit Lions in May. So that's going to be Georgia's big challenge. But your thoughts on what Michigan has done and what it can do?
Yeah, I mean, awesome what it's done. It's just been fun, I think, to watch because Michigan's interesting. They're an interesting program, so I want them to be relevant. And I was up there in October, and Harbaugh was so engaged and engaging, and as you said, I mean, he has been prone to the 1,000-yard stare for a while and like not even able to communicate, but that was not the guy I sat down with. He was having a great time and he was really enjoying the team. He kept saying, I like guys that like football, and these guys like football, and this team looks like it. I mean, they look like they are having a blast together. Great player leadership and an improved, engaged coaching staff, I think, has really helped them. I mean, they're playing really, really well. So it's not like again, I'm surprised at that point spread. I think that's too big, but we'll see how things develop between now and New Year's Eve. This stat shocked me. I started looking this up because I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, this is going to be, you know, ground and pound and, you know, just punch your way to third and short and hopefully you keep drives going and inch your way down the field. Michigan leads the nation in number of plays 50 yards or longer. From scrimmage, 17 of them. They lead the nation in number of plays 60 yards and longer, 10. They're tied for the lead, plays 70 and longer with 6. So, I mean, they have made some explosive plays. They found ways. They had 2 huge plays in the first half against Iowa for touchdowns. Now,
gadget plays. They like gadget plays. They set up the bomb and they have huge runs.
Right. Yeah. Now,
it's not what you think.
Right. Yeah. Right. I don't think you're going to get the huge runs against Georgia. Those are really hard to do just with the speed that they have to close on people. Now, you can throw it on them, and Andrell Anthony can make plays. Tight end Eric All is very good, and, yeah, you throw in some gadget stuff. We saw Georgia's secondary give up some very big plays, so that's possible. And Cade McNamara has been good. I mean, he's not been, you know, Bryce Young, but he's had a very good season. Protects the ball, doesn't take sacks. I give him a real chance. Now, I do think that primarily, though, they are Hassan Haskins driven, mostly power run game between the tackles, and that's a hard way to go against Georgia. On the flip side, though, yeah, Stetson Bennett, how does he do against that monster pass rush? Does he avoid mistakes or does he play into them? And do they have to go to JT Daniels? That's got to become job one for Kirby Smart, and we'll get more to them. But
another guy jumping the damn segment.
I'm sorry.
This is the easiest game plan.
All right,
there's four teams we're going to discuss each. We're 2 in and we're 0-2.
I'm done discussing Michigan now.
All right. Georgia, okay. They're number 3. I mean, there's only 4. Okay, Georgia, do we have a quarterback controversy? What kind of team enters the playoff when you have a quarterback controversy? Now, I have been skeptical that you can win a national championship with the boutique law firm of Stetson Bennett. Nice player. But if you need someone to win you the game, can he win you the game? Yesterday, when their defense that had carried them all season fell apart, that defensive line, I'll break the rule. Got no pass rush on Alabama. That would be an issue for Cade. If Cade McNamara gets to sit back there, he becomes a lot better. He becomes really good. There was no pass rush. Where was the pass rush? It was amazing. That can't hold. Michigan's got a very good offensive line. But can you win this thing? Can you beat Michigan and Alabama back-to-back with Stetson Bennett? That, to me, is the – I have faith that the defense will respond. There's too many great players, and that's going to improve. But what do you do with this quarterback, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, that's job one for Kirby Smart for the next 4 weeks, is to figure out whether Stetson Bennett can get you to the championship game. The fact of the matter is, in 2021, you have to win a shootout or two along the way, and Stetson Bennett couldn't do it. He could not match plays with Bryce Young, couldn't come close yesterday. You know, theoretically, Michigan is not going to be a shootout. But, as you pointed out, they're making
scoring
plays.
40
they're scoring
points.
They're scoring points.
You can say whatever you want about, like, Iowa as an opponent. They got a defense. Like, Ohio State has a defense. Like, Michigan State, Penn State. These schools have defenses. They may not be – I mean, Iowa's never winning that game. They have no offense. No. But they have a defense, pretty good. They're putting up huge numbers on them eventually.
Yeah. Yep. No, I mean, it's – Michigan's offense has progressively gotten better. So for Georgia, yes, they will. I mean, they will have to make some plays. Their receiving core is getting more healthy. We saw George Pickens get involved for the first time. Blaylock has come back. Their tight ends are ridiculous. Best tight ends in the country in total. But they've got to be able to run the ball, and they've got to be able to keep out of third and five or longer so that Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson can't just turn loose on you. I think they can do that. Now, we'll see. They can open holes. They open them on Alabama. We'll see if they can open them on Michigan. We'll see if Michigan can tackle and close the way that Alabama did. But Georgia has the ability to control the ball, run, move the ball, score. But if it's got to be an up and down game and you need to throw 20-yard passes all over the place, you got to consider playing JT Daniels.
Let me ask you this, Pete. Let me switch it. You can bring up what you wanted to say. But this loss was like, this was a rattler, man. Program rattling loss. Now, it had no value, right? It didn't hurt them. I mean, I guess they play in Cincinnati instead of Michigan right now. They're still in the playoff. But this was like, we question everything. And there's this foreboding. There's this, like, it's like, you know, you live in Boston. It was like the Red Sox until they finally won it. It hangs over everything where it's like, are we going to gag this away? We never can beat these Alabama guys. You know, can we do it? How much is that, you think, a factor? Or did losing this game actually help because you got 3 weeks to reset the whole thing? And then you can bring up maybe your Stetson Bennett thoughts.
No, I do think it's program rattling, and it makes you really have to ponder what you do in the future at the quarterback position. I think that's the thing that gets rattled the most. Like, they're not going to wholesale change their defense. Now, they're certainly do make adjustments, and they got to obviously coach them up better, so there's not those huge busts. But I really wonder, with George Pickens back, you know, he had two catches for 41 yards. One of those obviously was a 37-yard catch early in the game. Does that help JT Daniel? Because George Pickens is sort of the downfield, field-stretching threat that Georgia really didn't have all season. So Stetson Bennett, if you don't have a game-breaking receiver, actually makes some more sense. I mean, Brock Bowers was targeted, I think, like 16 times yesterday. The stats I'm looking at right now say 10 receptions for 139 yards. And he was thrown to a lot more. He had 10 receptions. The next highest was Cook at 4, and then Burton at 3. So essentially, Georgia's offense was unhealthily reliant on tight end. That's probably going to have to change, because I really feel like Stetson Bennett may not have to win you a shootout. The problem is, if you go down 10, he's not really well equipped to bring you back. Like, that was what was very apparent in the second half yesterday. And you wonder if Nick Saban was coaching Georgia, much like he did in the same stadium in the same matchup, if he had pulled the trigger and gone to JT Daniels and realized that Stetson Bennett wasn't equipped to do that. One of the reasons why Kirby Smart really likes Stetson Bennett is the team really likes Stetson Bennett. When I was with him last week in Athens on Monday, Kirby Smart said, like, the strength of the team is the team. Like, that's one of the things. And JT Daniels is a bit of an odd duck. He's a California kid. He's a little bit aloof. He's not sort of that, like, rallying cry, magnetic personality that Stetson Bennett has clearly proven to be. So you wonder how much, like, personality, how much the reaction of the team and such would play into a decision like this. Because everything changes when you change the quarterback. So I really think it's going to be a fascinating thing. How many times do you think Kirby Smart's going to get asked about his quarterback situation over the next 3 weeks? And they have certainly opened the door to that scrutiny.
Yeah, he was asked about it right after the game with Stetson Bennett sitting next to him. And his answer was what you would expect. It was a good answer. You know, it was like, we have all the confidence in the world, Stetson. You know, he played fine. Our defense let him down, basically. But then at the end, he said, I also have great confidence in JT Daniels. But to your point, I mean, Nick Saban was his mentor. Saban made two of the gutsiest quarterback changes I've ever seen when he benched Jalen Hurts for Tua in the championship game. And then a year later, when he benched Tua for Jalen Hurts in the SEC championship game, both against Georgia, both worked brilliantly. This is going to be a huge thing for Kirby to figure out. See if he can find the right solution.
We don't like picking on players at all. I mean, they're still college kids, right? This isn't the NFL. So no one wants to say anything bad about Stetson Bennett. But this is the situation you're in. It's obvious to everyone. It will be the talk radio discussion point in Atlanta for the next month. Falcons aren't any good. And when you're a kid like Stetson Bennett, and you know, it takes an enormous amount of maturity and mental toughness and confidence when you're an NFL quarterback to deal with this type of discussion, let alone when you're a college kid. So I have no doubt that he has that, but it's a tough situation when all of a sudden everyone is like, you're the guy who may hold us back, when it was a lot of problems from going down. It was interesting you said about getting behind. This will be very interesting in that game. This is why I like when Harbaugh runs a game. They went for that trick play to Donovan Edwards. They threw a backward pass to Donovan Edwards, the running back. He threw this absolute dime for a 75-yard touchdown pass. That put Michigan. That was early in the game, and Michigan was moving the ball. But they put Iowa down 14 right away, and that was it. Iowa was never going to come. They were all of a sudden. It was like an early knockout blow. I remember Derek Jeter used to try this in big games. He'd swing at the very first pitch of the game to try to hit a home run to set the tone. And to me, it was like, man, that is game strategy. We see some awful game strategies in college football coaching, Dave Aranda, who go analytics over common sense. But that was like, we don't need a gadget play right here, but let's do it. This is going to work, and we're going to be up 14, and Iowa's going to be like, I can't come. We're not coming back from that. And I'll be very interested if Michigan can get a lead in that game. All right. Pete, you wrote a great column. You talked to all the guys, Gary Patterson, Chris Peterson, Brad Stevens, the Butler basketball coach, right? Urban. Someone finally made it. Group of five team has got a chance. You can play. If they win two games, they're the national champions. It's the first time in this sport where a team can sit there and say, one of these teams could go, if I win all my games, I'm the national champ. Because we saw TCU do it and they didn't make it. They win it. We saw Boise win it. And that includes the bowl game where they put them in the kid table bowl game, right? Yeah. Keep winning. I guess, you know, we'll see. We can talk a little about Cincinnati's possibilities. We already kind of did because we screwed up all the segment. That's fine. But just the significance of that and what you heard talking to, you know, because I feel like when I've talked to it about Chris Peterson and Urban Meyer and Gary Patterson, actually, and Whittingham, too. And they all were like, always going to wonder what we could have done, right? And is that the sense you got, Pete?
Yeah, no, it is, Dan. And I feel like you wrote a great column on Yahoo on Sunday that kind of was like, you know, well, we all want Bama. Well, now the underdog has a chance at Bama. And how great
they've always
that?
Chanted, it's, we want Bama. Yes. And then it's like, because they knew they weren't getting them. Now it's like, oh, okay.
It's like, but underdog, we got them. Underdog yeah. justice. All right, you want them? Here,
Hold me back.
Here they
yeah,
are.
Oh, yeah. Crap, yeah.
Fun interviews. Great catching up with all those guys. Urban was particularly interesting because he obviously was the first underdog to crash the BCS at Utah in 2004. I know it's hard to think of Urban Meyer as an underdog these days, but back then he was with the scheme and with the team, Alex Smith led and Paris Warren and all those guys. They were kind of the forebearers to this. And now Urban's son is on the Cincinnati team, which I don't think really a lot of people know. Nate Meyer is a senior walk-on. He wants to be a coach. He charts a lot of the plays. You know, when I was on the sideline for the Indiana game, he was like, you know, he had like a clipboard, you know, he's in uniform and everything, but he had the clipboard and was charting stuff, just different little nuances. And he spent some time when Urban was at Ohio State and after Simon at Ohio State, like he would just go like study special teams for a week there as they were like doing special teams offseason reviews. So he's got a good jump and is a great kid. I think he'll be a very successful coach in his training. So it was fun sort of going down memory lane there, but Brad Stevens was the most interesting. In a lot of ways, he's sort of the consummate underdog college coach of our generation and bringing Butler to back-to-back national title games. I think in what, 10-11 or was it 9-10, Pat?
10-11.
Okay, 10-11. Yeah. And the one thing he said was interesting, because remember now Butler's in the Big East, so they're in the Horizon League back then, which made the feat all the more kind of astounding. Well, the most interesting thing going forward that he said was, so when you're in one of these smaller leagues and you have to win all your league games, you spend in basketball January and February just puckered up and tight because you have to be perfect. So as Brad has tracked this from afar, and I don't want to be disingenuous, he's not exactly on the Bearcat message boards, but he's curious, like all sports fans are. It's a story that's captured his attention in some way. What he said was he would notice their conference game scores were close. And he was like, that happens in conference play. You know them. You play them every year. They know your plays. You know their plays. Like, that's what happens. It's hard to just go roll out and win in conference play. It doesn't matter what league you're in. So for him, he said once their teams got out of the Horizon tournament and won and got into the NCAA tournament, they started to play really free because that pressure of perfection was gone. And so his quote was, once you get into the big tournament, the heat gets flipped. So I don't know how much Cincinnati was pressing. I think that Luke Fickell was certainly worried about that, you know, style points, playing perfect and everything. I think it'll be fascinating to see if the heat does get flipped. Do they try to onside kick? Do they play with some of that Chris Peterson verve that we used to see Boise play with, where they go for trick plays? They you know, try to do things to reverse the same pressure they've been feeling and press it on Alabama. Because now there's a pressure of, well, we can't lose to these guys from this mid-major league. Like, we're Bama, they're Cincinnati. So I do think the Cincinnati players going to go in confident with the way they played against Georgia last year. Again, Sauce Gardner didn't play in that game. Cincinnati's left tackle, James Hudson, who was a third, fourth round pick and was their best offensive lineman by far, got thrown out of the game early. So Georgia obviously had guys opt out and it wasn't Georgia, but most of the Georgia players that are playing this year were there last year. So again, it's not comparable, but the experience of Cincinnati's 30 seniors playing a game, winning a majority of the game, losing on a field goal with 3 seconds left, a 50-something yard field goal, I think they know they're not going to just be physically and massively outclassed. And they're not going to be outclassed in speed. And so I veered off the underdog coach question a little bit, but I do really feel like that's going to be some of the MO that they bring in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just wonderful. I mean, for those of us who have watched this forever and beaten our heads against the table, you know, wanting to see these teams get a chance for it to happen, like, this is the ultimate underdog victory, because not only did they make it and they made the playoff, it looks like they're keeping their coach, which in past, other than like Brad Stevens and Butler, usually your coach is going. Like, Urban Meyer was leaving Utah, right? Patterson didn't leave, but P.J. Fleck was leaving Western Michigan. Scott Frost was leaving Central Florida. It looks like Luke Fickell's going to stay. You know, I mean, all reports are that Oklahoma's getting ready to hire Brent Venables, which should take care of the really elite jobs, unless Luke Fickell's got his eye on the NFL. Stay at Cincinnati. So this is win, 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 win for the Bearcats and for all of the people of that milieu to me. The one thing, though, before anybody wants to give the committee too much credit for taking care of Cincinnati, they had no choice. There was literally no other choice. If Oklahoma State gets to the pylon, I would not have been surprised if they screwed Cincinnati in favor of Oklahoma State. I mean, it was literally down to inches between whether or not I think those two teams might have gotten into the playoffs. So I'm glad Baylor took that out of the bag for the committee, because I don't trust them to do it themselves. But it's great. I mean, this is an urban commuter school for the most part, blue collar student body. You know, these are not a whole bunch of, it's not the leafy suburban rich kid school where it's a $60,000 tuition. I wrote a story on that. I won't go into all the details of it, but if you want to find it, it's out there. Just, this is a gritty football program for a gritty school that's finally getting its chance. Good.
A lot of first-generation college students.
Yeah.
Indeed, blue-collar, affordable. It is. It's an urban campus. It's great. It's great. Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think Luke Fickell is probably staying. And I remember Jim Larrañaga when he was at George Mason. He's now the Miami basketball coach. Remember, they made the Final Four. They were really the first one, and he stayed. And he said, man, I hope everyone who ever has this stays, because when you get there for the first time, like that year after, yeah, like it's a renewed honeymoon. Like you can't do anything wrong. You were the conqueror. Yeah. Why would you leave? Right. You know, like unless it's the absolute perfect job, like stay, you're now. It's like everybody loves you. And generally, you know, like in the city of Cincinnati, not that Luke Fickell isn't well known or appreciated. Now he's a rock star, right?
Oh, yeah.
And because everyone in the city and it really across the state is going to get behind Cincinnati. They're the quote unquote little brother that isn't threatening. And Luke Fickell is an Ohio to Ohio State fans. And Luke Fickell played at Ohio State and he coached Ohio. He was the head coach interim for a season. He's Ohio to the core. You are a hero. So I hope he does get that chance to enjoy it. One other thing, this will obviously be interesting. I'll say right now, I don't want this final score to be a referendum on whether a group of five team can ever compete, because this is Alabama. Alabama just beat Georgia by 17. Last year, they beat Notre Dame by 17. They beat Ohio State by 28. They beat Michigan State by 38 points in the 2015 semis. They beat Washington by 17 points in the 2016 semis. They beat Clemson by 18 points in the 2017 semis. Alabama doesn't have, except for the year they lost Ohio State, they don't have close games in the semifinals. So I don't want to hear like, oh, see? Like,
right, right. That's
they kick everybody's
point.
Ass, man. This is what they do.
They blew out Oklahoma. Yeah, no, they did. They that's how they treat everybody in this.
Right.
Case, so
that's why their spread's so high. Is it 13 and a half? Yeah.
13 and a half.
And it's, I bet it goes up. Alabama kicks people's ass. That's what happens. Okay. And Cincinnati.
Hashtag analysis.
Excellent analysis. Why the hell I didn't pick four? I broke all my rules. This is Alabama. They kick people's ass. So. Don't be shocked if they kick Cincinnati's ass, but good, great on the Bearcats. All right, couple things on the coaching searches that we're going to get to, because we got plenty of time to talk about these games, and we'll do all the bowls later and all that. Does look like Brent Venables to Oklahoma. He emerged very early. He's going to leave the safety of I think he was making $2.5 million coaching as a defensive coordinator at Clemson. Could have been the Auburn coach last year. This is the one he's going to take, it looks like. Quick thoughts on that. We talked about Venables before. If you're just listening, go back a couple podcasts. But any additional thoughts briefly, because we got a whole bunch of stuff to get through.
Coached in 8 national title games as a defensive coordinator. Good coach. Levy is supposed to go with him if he takes the job as the OC. That'll sort of keep Oklahoma's high-end offensive identity going there. And, Brent knows how to build it. He learned from Dabo how to build it. He knows what it's supposed to look like on defense. Be interesting to see if he brings his sign stealers with him, because that's always been part of the Clemson lore a little bit. But Brent Venables is an excellent football coach who, you know, there'll be an adjustment to him to be a head coach, because he is such a ball guy, and it just takes a little bit different cadence to be a head coach. I think he and Joe Castiglione will be an excellent pairing.
Yeah, and this continues Castiglione's track record and Oklahoma's unbelievable track record of hiring assistants and not hiring sitting head coaches. Lincoln Riley obviously was an assistant. Bob Stoops was an assistant. Barry Switzer was an assistant. John Blake was an assistant. The one guy they hired who wasn't was Howard Schnellenberger, and it was a one-year disaster. He was 5-5-1, and they ran him out. So, you know, it's like you see some programs, or a lot of programs, most programs, like we got to have a proven head coach. Well, it's worked the other way awfully well at Oklahoma. Now, not everybody has the advantages, and the Venables is, to Pete's point, I think is a very good one. He is a ball coach. He's an X and O, dark room, scheme it up, get on the sidelines, you know, and coach him up in practice, all that stuff. But yes, can he lead the whole program? That's going to be the challenge for him and be the face of the program. I think he can, but it will be an adjustment.
Miami. Reports have Miami targeting Mario Cristobal, the Oregon coach. Now, this may get settled one way or another by the time you hear this. Oregon is throwing money. Although, honestly, after watching Utah just pound them a second time, I mean, to say briefly, if there's a 12-team playoff, who the hell wants to play Utah?
Yeah.
I can't imagine the Buckeyes are excited about that Rose Bowl matchup.
No. Utah, and they, you know, they switched QBs or they struggled early, but I mean, all their losses are like to BYU, as Oregon State. This is a good team, man. Pitt would be a heck of a little bit terrifying too.
Right. See, now, we could have had a really exciting 12-team playoff.
Yeah, but instead, we'll have a work day, a weekday. You know, start at noon in the West Coast TV window. You know, that's what we got to do. What, people work on December 31st? Who? Not the conference commissioners. They don't.
No.
They're stunned. Totally, I mean, they're stunned that people work. I don't like, and they're just around rich boosters who don't.
Yeah, the
like,
people that are bringing their drinks to them at poolside are working.
Yeah. Wait, what do you mean you drive a FedEx truck and you're gonna miss the game?
Yeah.
Just tell them you can't work. So we will see what happens with Mario Cristobal. How about Manny Diaz, though?
I was going to say, have they broken it to Manny yet?
They actually have not. At one point, the report from Barry Jackson, his very connected guy down in Miami, in South Florida, was, if Mario wants the job, they will fire Manny. If not, they keep Manny. I mean, that's like being like, hey, hon, if my mistress decides to accept my wedding proposal, I'm going to divorce you.
But otherwise,
we're gonna put some money into the program to help man. Otherwise, I'll like get that kitchen done. Like, what? How the hell is this working?
This is like they're out Auburning Auburn. This is the kind of thing Auburn does, you know?
I mean, come on, Miami. And you wonder now. Look, here's my number one stat on Manny Diaz. He currently has no verbal commitments, signing days in 2 weeks, from a single player in Palm, Broward, or Miami-Dade County.
He got a commitment in Dade yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry. One. I already got one. He didn't until they started saying he was going to fire him. All right, my bad. He has one now. Like, that's not the formula. I don't know what the formula to win Miami is, get the Miami kids. But anyway, look, there is a faction that wants Mario Cristobal. There was a faction. I don't even want to break it to Nevin Shapiro. They wanted Lane Kiffin. He re-signed for big money. There is a lot of factions.
Too many factions.
Come on, you.
They're also probably going to hire an athletic director after a Cristobal decision comes in.
Yeah. Here's the order of events. We're going to hire a coach before we fire the coach, before we hire the AD. That makes perfect sense.
I love Miami. It's everything about life in Miami. None of it works until it does, and then it's glorious. Right. You sit around and go, man, this place is an absolute, just nothing works here. It doesn't make any sense. It's a complete mess. But man, is the weather nice?
Yeah.
God, this food is so good. Yeah.
You're sitting there in Biscayne Bay. Like, okay. You go,
it's all right.
I'll put up with the dysfunction.
Relax. A little dysfunctional around here.
Yep.
Any hope for Miami, Pete?
I actually don't think keeping Manny Diaz is that bad of an option. Like the Cristobal play is clearly to bring him home. The interesting thing about Cristobal in this moment, by the time people are in this podcast, it'll be settled, is he's going to have to call Phil Knight and say, hey, Phil, I'm ditching Nike U and I'm going home. Now, the home part is, you know, understandable. We're all where we're from, right? The pull of home, you know, tugs at us all in one way or another. But Cristobal would be a great energy jolt to get Miami back. And Dan Radakovich would be the right architect to build Miami into Clemson. Really, that's what it comes down
to. Clemson AD, who's probably taking the Miami job.
Sorry, I'm always, as always, way too far in the weeds. Thank you for pulling me up.
Not everyone knows the Clemson AD.
Yeah, no, nor they should. Yeah, he's the Georgia Tech AD. He's been around the ACC, but he understands how to build a winner. And Clemson is a little complicated place, a little complicated history. Miami is a complicated place. He'd been there in the 80s for a couple of years. He has a degree from there. And so that's a great end of career challenge, right? What else are you going to do at Clemson? Build some more slides and putt-putt courses? You know, like there's, you know, they made the playoff 6 years in a row. You can, building is more fun than sustaining. I remember coaches always telling me that over the years. And so you go there with a clean slate. And the one thing people at Miami will tell you, and they've told me over and over the past couple of weeks, we have money, we have money, we have money. Money's not an object. I won't bore you with like the hospital tie-in and the hundreds of millions of dollars more that are coming into the school that they're going to siphon off for football to build the brand. But the money is there and it is real. And if you have a dynamic coach like Mario Cristobal, who's obviously an elite recruiter of South Florida, and you have a plan in place to build Miami to be competitive with an AD who's done it at a faded brand and brought it back, I think that's a pretty powerful combination.
I mean, yeah, they're talking about like making Radakovich the highest paid AD, and then they're obviously going to pay Cristobal a ton and his staff a ton, and they're going to invest in all the things that you allegedly need to invest in now. So there, I don't think money will be any impediment to Miami.
Imagine what the turnover chains are going to look like next year.
They might just have a turnover Bentley that you get in and drive out of the stadium.
Diamond encrusted Bentley.
Yes.
Before we get to a small sample Heisman and say something nice, this is the story that was most sent to us over the weekend. We've expressed our displeasure with animals on airplanes. The emotional support. What do they call it?
Yes, emotional support animals.
The support animals. Yes. We don't believe they're real. We don't believe that's a thing. If you're that freaked out, go just take the train. Amtrak's there for you. We've seen horses. We've seen like partridges. I mean, everything gets on those planes.
Flirty.
Yes, Flirty. Flirty is our faithful longtime listeners will remember Flirty.
Flirty the horse on the O'Hare to Omaha commuter plane. That's a small plane now, mind you. That's a small plane. We ain't talking about one of these big ass things that go to Paris.
That's a really bad way to spend an hour.
Flirty the horse. A horse was on a plane. Anyway, okay. A woman on a recent Delta Airlines flight allegedly began to breastfeed her pet cat.
Oh, come on.
Mid-flight. What? And refused to stop after getting caught. I repeat.
Stop it.
Yeah.
The incident, I thought you were going with us being mentioned in the emotional support monkey lawsuit.
Oh, all right.
Pat is rattled, by the way.
I am very rattled.
Pat, I thought the pole assassin in the emotional support monkey was going to be the depths that this podcast hit. I really did. And I thought us getting mentioned in a lawsuit over it would be part of that. But then this happened.
Oh, my God.
I don't care if Texas's assistant coach is dating the pole assassin, former stripper from the Jerry Springer Show, and she has a monkey that bit a kid at a Halloween party. You think that's a lot? Well, where do you get to this one, buddy? That's group of five. This is power five.
Clearly. Oh, my God.
The incident allegedly happened during a recent trip board Delta Flight 1360 between Syracuse, New York, and Atlanta. Okay, so there was flight attendants posted a message to the aircraft communications reporting system, like this is official stuff, that read, passenger in 13A is breastfeeding a cat and will not put the cat back in the carrier. She asked for the red coat team to storm the plane upon landing. The red coat team is an elite airport customer service experts who are specially trained to handle on the stop customer issues. I don't think they're trained for this one.
No, nobody's trained for that one.
Imagine telling people, yeah, I'm in Delta Special Ops, like in the Army. No. The Delta.
Delta Force.
I think you're all the breastfeeding cat problems.
Just like last night.
Get right in there.
This woman was breastfeeding a cat, and I had to handle it. Flight attendant.
Not a Navy SEAL. I'm a Delta SEAL.
Delta Forces. I got to learn how to. You got to sit in the sand for like 3 days, cold. Yeah, a lot going on. Flight attendant Ainsley Elizabeth. The actual Delta Forces would not want to take that. They will do anything but this. Flight attendant Ainsley Elizabeth took to TikTok to explain the situation. Of course.
Why wouldn't you? Yeah.
The woman had one of those like hairless cats swaddled up in a blanket.
It's even a hairless cat? Come on.
Does it matter if it has hair?
The hairless cats look like satanic, though. You know, I mean, come on. You've got to be kidding me.
Okay, I didn't think that was going to be the thing that put it over the top, but hey, it looks like a baby.
her shirt was up and she was trying to get the cat to latch and she wouldn't put the cat back in the carrier. The cat was screaming for its life. It honestly, it gets worse. There's a part that I can't even, I don't know if I can even tell this story. I'm reading Newsweek and I,
I don't think our listeners really want the nitty gritty.
Oh, I think they probably do, but I don't know whether we're the people to provide it for them.
Fair. If you have anybody who could possibly be offended by this, just stop the podcast. You've been warned.
We won't blame you for not getting to the end.
You've been warned. So apparently... to encourage the cat to latch, is that the term we're using?
Sure.
The woman had butter packets from a restaurant. What?
Oh, come on. No.
She was using the butter to...
Come on.
I don't know what else to say. To encourage a latch.
I believe AP style is latch.
I don't know. I'm sorry. We're here for the truth. This is the truth. It was on TikTok.
Well, if it's on TikTok, it's got to be true.
Pat, would you do if you were sitting next to the breastfeeding cat woman?
I would jump out of the plane. I would open the emergency latch and go. I mean, give me a parachute and I've got to go. You want to do that in your own home? Fine. But why on earth would you think that is perfectly acceptable behavior on an airplane?
What do you mean in your own home?
Well, I mean, I'm not down with it, you know, but look, people in their privacy, you know, whatever. But
is bestiality legal?
I'm
not even searching that. I don't want to even know.
You
search that and all of a sudden the Google suggestions are going to be insane. Best not to know.
The Delta Secret Service is coming for you.
I didn't know. I don't want to know. Dawned on me.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, the red coat Delta Special Ops. So you go home and say, honey, you're not going to believe what happened today.
All right. Pete, you have anything to add on this? Or are you going to start me saying
I don't.
No? And I don't. Then you, Pete will be employed while Pat and I are fired. I don't know what to tell you. I'm reading Newsweek. It's Newsweek. It's reputable. Or used to be. All right, let's hand out some small sample Heisman, please.
Please.
Can we give them to the Delta Special Ops?
Hello, record book.
Hello, small sample Heisman.
How about that?
I got a Heisman trophy. I am going to give it to Cincinnati tailback Jerome Ford, the Alabama transfer. Rushed the Bearcats to the matchup with Alabama. 18 carries, 187 yards, a 79-yard touchdown, 2 touchdowns. Jerome Ford wore the Cougars' defense ragged. Cincinnati ends up scoring 35, including 21 in the pivotal third, and roll on to the playoff.
All right, I'm going with Baylor safety Jerron McVay, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But he made the tackle that made the playoff decision easy for the committee. He was the one that got Desmond Jackson enough to get him out of bounds and on the ground just short of the pylon, fourth down, final seconds to win the Big 12 championship for Baylor and to avoid a massive Cincinnati-Oklahoma State controversy. Great, great win, great season for Baylor. Oklahoma State, I mean, boy, how would you like to be a fan of that program and watch them have like 8 plays inside the 5 and get nothing? I mean, just disastrous the way they got 3 and then they came back and got nothing. But I mean, just malfunction after malfunction. Baylor tried to screw themselves up by going for a 4th-and-1 in their own territory. Bad decision by Dave Aranda, but a great season by Dave Aranda and the Bears. And then Jerron McVay, the hero play of the day for the Baylor Bears to win their Big 12 title.
Very good call. They
how
tried
about the fake Chris Weber moment there? That was the thing that I'll remember about that play. They tried to call a timeout. Everybody walked away. Then they realized they didn't have any timeouts left. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen that. And I wasn't watching the game with volume, so I don't know if that was explained somehow by the announcers or the referees, but it looked like everybody walks to the sideline. And so I'm watching it. I'm like, all right, nobody's got any timeouts. This is going to happen. You know, this pivotal play that's going to like decide the fate of the football season. And then it was like, oh, just kidding. Let's just run back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's like, I was watching without sound. I'm wondering, like, why did they stop the game?
Yeah. I that's what I assumed. So I could be off on
it's
that.
It's a bigger penalty in basketball than football.
Correct. That, it's though. Punitive so, in basketball.
Yeah. Probably because someone would trick somebody, like pretend they were calling timeout, then like dribble. That had to have been some kind of, although they you could do that in football, right? I mean, it's like when they used to say clock it and then they'd not clock it. Yeah, Baylor tried to, did everything in the second half to lose that game until they did everything to win it. It was incredible. And man, the Pokes, oh, so close. I think they were getting into that playoff, and it was literally inches, and I never thought Penix for Indiana got, yeah, I think he was down. I still think he was down, but he got
yeah, this one, at least the pylon never moved, so you knew
pylon
he was
cam.
Down.
Pylon yep. Cam was like, oh, my God, that thing's perfect. All right, I'm giving mine to Kenny Pickett, Pitt quarterback, and I know that Pittsburgh's defense was really the difference in that ACC title game. Wake Forest QB Sam Hartman was sacked 5 times, picked off 4 times, you know, 21 of 46. They did a great, great job of limiting Wake Forest on an absolutely glorious night for the Pitt Panthers. But I'm giving it to Pickett. He's the QB. He gets the glory. 20 of 33 for 253 yards, 2 touchdowns passing, and 1 58-yard touchdown run that broke open the game early or got the game going early. Avoided any interceptions. The touchdown run, he did a fake slide in full stride and then didn't lose speed and go. That is one of the most athletic things I've ever seen. And I covered a lot of Simone Biles. Like, how did he not blow out his ACLs in doing that? I don't know. Someone's like, they should ban that. It's not fair. And I'm like, it's not fair, but the next guy who does it is going to be out for a year. So don't ever try this at home. Kenny Pickett has got wheels. Great season for Kenny Pickett. Great season for Pitt. Program that needed that. And Pickett's one of our favorite. Came back to play, and he's been entertaining for a long time. Congrats, and good luck going forward for him. All right. Said a lot of mean things on this podcast, as we always do. Can we say something nice? Pat, can you say something nice?
I can. I'm going to say something nice about Conference USA. I think without question, the biggest loser in the realignment, just mauling of the sport in previous months. They were gutted by the American Athletic Conference coming in, taking people, Sun Belt grabbing people, teetering on the brink of extinction. Looks like they'll survive in a diminished state, but they had a heck of a championship game and a very nice season there. UTSA against Western Kentucky, wild, entertaining shootout on Friday night. The Roadrunners having this remarkable season, going through 11-1, take a huge lead, look like they're blowing out Western Kentucky, and then Western comes back with their Houston Baptist transfer tandem at quarterback and receiver, mounts this big rally. UTSA holds on in the end, wins 49-41, and for a league that's had a rough go of it, that was a really nice way for them to go out. UTSA, 12-1 season, nice job.
I'm going to stay with Pat's small conference theme and say something nice about Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois went 0-5 last season. They did not win a game. They were sort of a reluctant participant in the MAC shotgun schedule. Thomas Hammack, the early part of his tenure there, the former Ravens running back coach who came back to his alma mater, Sean Frazier made that hire. They went 0-5. It's hard to go winless in anything in modern college sports and bounce back. They don't only bounce back, but they bounced back and beat Georgia Tech. They bounced back and won the MAC. And the MAC is a very difficult league to win. All the credit in the world on the field goes to Rocky Lombardi, their quarterback. He had a rough go at Michigan State. There's no other way to say it. They didn't have any playmakers around him. There's no Kenneth Walker taking pressure off him. He was running for his life. And honestly, it might not have been the right level for him. And he went to the MAC and was a paradigm-changing quarterback who gutted them to close win after close win after close win. And finally, after all those one-score MAC wins, they go to the MAC title game and they blow out Kent State. So Northern Illinois, congratulations. Heck of a season.
All right, I was going to say something nice about football in Utah, but I got a second one. But congrats to football in Utah. BYU, 10-2.
Utah, Pac-12 champs. Utah State, Mountain West champs. They're 10-3. When the hell, Utah? I mean, like all these other states that, like, we got all these players around here. Not like it's Utah. How's this happening? I don't know, but it happened. Congratulations to all those people in Utah. But I really want to say something nice about Brian Kelly's accent, Southern accent.
Good call.
How did we not get to this?
Yeah, how did we?
Going to go down the road, fixing to do some visiting with y'all. He often did back at North Shore of Boston. He got unbelievably mocked, of course, for this thing. I had an assistant coach in the SEC text me the other day, like, between quitting on the Irish and the fake accent, they've got all sorts of stuff to use against them early. I was like, good luck with that. The guy wins everywhere. He'll be fine. But the accent, I think, opens up either the real coaching hire at some point or at least a Netflix sitcom that I'm trying to develop where where Coach O takes over the Boston College Eagles and tries to do the reversal. No more go Tigers. It's like, hey, kid.
That's a Netflix sitcom for sure.
Let's go to the Packy on Dot Ave. Wicked good Pats game tonight. You watching? Coach O is going to be the Ted Lasso of New England United. I don't know. I'm still working it. When I make millions off of this.
Get that stadium built in Holyoke.
You get no money from this Brian Kelly and your fake Southern accent. It's coming together. It's coming together. If you got plot, we need side characters. I'm open. I'm open to ideas. Never say your idea out loud. Hollywood will steal it. I'm copywriting it right now. All right, this pod's gone on long enough, and we've already talked about breastfeeding cats. So I have more Coach O jokes, but I don't want to do them.
Do you want to say Newsweek one more time, Dan, just to cover your tail?
It was Newsweek. Blame it on Newsweek.
Free Newsweek.
Blame it on. I think he used to come to my house as a kid every week. It's very reputable
publication.
So now, what the hell happened? We'll be back on Tuesday with our regularly scheduled show. I'm sure there'll be more developments and everything. Please continue to subscribe, share us on social media, use the hashtag CFE. We appreciate all of that and keep sending us ridiculous stories about the follies of airline travel. Talk to you then.